You've sent me some interesting questions here. And the first one is one that I've thought about a lot over the years of training teachers and observing other teachers working and so on. And it's a question about non-doing hands, which so easily turn out to be hands that have a sort of deadness and nothingness about them. Is that the kind of area that you're getting at, that people say, well, I'm putting my hands on, I know I'm not supposed to do anything. And in the cases of some teachers, their non-doing hands have a sort of vibrant, energized quality about them that you really feel influencing not just your external musculature, shall we say, but your entire nervous system. But other teachers' non-doing hands don't have that. It's absent. I remember at one point in the training class in New York, a couple of trainees coming in one day and saying how they'd been visiting somewhere else, and they'd noticed this, well, I was going to say they'd noticed this quality. I should switch that. I think I should say they'd noticed this lack of quality, that the verbal phraseology of not trying to do anything, not trying to manipulate, putting hands on in an undoing way, the verbal phraseology was along the same lines, but there was a lack of oomph. As they said, I remember that they just kept saying there was no energy, no energy. And it really set me off thinking about this because historically, for example, in FM's own early training in the 1930s in London, Erica Whitaker, a woman who was on that training and has spoken about it, I think that STAT have a pamphlet with a transcript of the year that she gave the annual Alexander Memorial Lecture for STAT in London. And she actually mentions that in that early 1930s training, when they began putting hands on each other, there was no real training from FM about how to put hands on. The training was all about looking after your own use. And at some point, FM would say to someone, now you're ready, you can go and put hands on. So they would just sort of go and put hands on each other and try to copy what they'd seen FM doing. But there was a word, a phrase that Erica used that again resonated for me and connects to what we're talking about. Because she said, in that early 1930s class, every now and then, FM, she would say, I would have my hands on someone. And every now and then, FM would come over and he'd put his hands over mine, and then the energy would flow. Was that phrase, and then the energy would flow, what does it mean? It sounds kind of spooky. It sounds like he's doing energy healing. It's etheric. It's what would you do? What's the expression? Woo-wah. No, is that the correct word? I've lost my American expressions. What's woo-woo? Okay, or spooky. But no, I think quite simply, I'm going to give you a little practical demonstration, and you can even try it out for yourself, or anyone else who's listening can try it out for themselves. So I'm going to stand up and hope that the lead on this headset is long enough. I think it is, yes, because I'm going to move back to where, oh, that's great. This headset does have a suitably long lead. So there's a chair. And I'm not going to do a classic hands on the back of the chair. I'm going to do something that I found very useful in training teachers and in running teachers' workshops, a very useful way of showing how the elements of being in the semi-flexed attitude with your hands on the back of a chair translate into energizing your hands on a student. So what I'm going to do is actually release knees and hips, semi-flex, and put my hands or parts of my fingers on the sides of the chair. And anybody who's listening to this or watching this can do the same, because what then happens, you see, I'm aware of the contact of my feet on the ground. Am I fully visible? Yes, my top half is visible, isn't it? So I put my hands there. Now, basic Alexander directing, neck releasing, lengthening out, sending my head out, lengthening through the spine, widening through the back and sides, undoing from the back of the pelvis through the thighs to the knees, letting my feet open onto the ground. And because I'm a four-footed, four-legged creature, releasing and widening between the tops of the arms and the shoulders, undoing to the elbows, releasing those upper arm muscles that get over-involved in the use of the hands. But in the process, I mustn't let my hands fall down in any way. So I need to keep a very palpable contact with the sides of the chair. I'm releasing through my pelvic base, through my legs to let my feet open to the ground. I'm releasing through my shoulder girdle to undo my arms, to let my hands open onto the chair. And from the contact of feet on the ground and hands on the chair, my spine is lengthening up between those four limbs, 4 feet, release to the ground, to come up from it, to let the back widen, to connect to the chair, to come back and up from it, to lengthen the spine, to release through the legs to the ground, to come up from it, to widen, to connect to the chair, to come back and up from it, to connect to the ground, to come up from it, up through the spine, let the ribs move to breathe, hands connect to the chair. The feet on the ground sends me up. The contact of the hands on the chair widens me. I'm responding to my connections to the outside world by opening up in myself along the basic lengthening and widening directions. So I'm going to come up. And to me, it's that constant, I would call it constant, well, let me think, constantly, consciously refreshing the energized directions through my own body and energizing them from the reference points of my feet on the ground and my hands on the sides of the chair. So if I were functioning as an Alexander teacher, rather than my hands on the sides of a chair, my hands would be on a person. They wouldn't necessarily be like that. They might be up there, they might be around there. They can be in all kinds of orientations, but it's the same principle. Hands to back to feet on the ground, feet on the ground sending you up through the whole central column to let you widen, to come out of yourself, to connect to the student, to use the contact of the student, to come back and up into yourself, to connect through to your feet, to come up from there. You have this, you will know, of course, Cindy, I've referred to this sometimes as the fountain effect. You continually energy from the contact with the ground, lengthening up through you, widening up through you, coming out through your shoulders and arms to your hands to connect to the student, which feeds it back then into that central fountain and connects it back down to the ground. So that, I think, to me, it's a very fascinating process. Now, I've been around this stuff, as you know, for an awful long time. And, you know, I've been literally around the world teaching in different countries, different continents. I know a lot of teacher trainers. I know people who've trained in many different places. Well, let's say within the area of those approaches to teacher training that very much focus on an indirect process. I'm not going to put my hands and try to manipulate this person. I'm not going to put my hands on and try to pull their head forward and up. I've learned from, when I say I'm just kind of pretending to be a teacher trained somewhere else, but within the, let's call it, within the non-doing spectrum, that young teacher, I say young, maybe, you know, just recently qualified, has perhaps been imbibed, absorbed a great deal about just put your hands on and give your own directions. In my experience, there are a couple of ways in which this lacks energy, that turns into this kind of slightly dead quality. One of them, unfortunately, can stem from my own mentors in this, Walter Carrington in particular. Walter Carrington and Dilys Carrington were very much the people from whom I would consider my mentors in this. You know, I owe them a huge debt. I learned most of what I know from them. I've learned things from other people, but they are the, you know, they are the central influences in my Alexander life, you could say. And Walter in particular would tend to emphasize, particularly in the first year or so of your three-year training, he'd say things like, put your hands on a practice person. We'd have these little groups of three where three first years would, under his supervision, put hands on each other. And he'd say, now pay no attention to the person in your hands. Think of them as a block of wood. They're of no interest to you. Your interest is on directing yourself. And it'll all happen as a result of you directing yourself. And I think that's an essential part of the process of, say, the first 6 months to 12 months of training. You need to really set up in people the practical discipline of looking after their own use, directing themselves as the primary focus, the main instrument whereby they will help a student in front of them, the student that they have their hands on. But you can't go on like that throughout the whole 3 years and send people out the door after 3 years with nothing more than that. And I think what happened sometimes was, you know, I would go back to London and run a teacher's workshop, and somebody who was trained in that way would put hands on me, and I would notice this kind of deadness, this lack of energy. And after some conversation, it would become apparent that they were still practicing this, you know, I'm not going to pay any attention to the student. In this case, it would happen to be me, John, pretending to be a student, but they were madly directing themselves and nothing was coming through. And I realized it's as if these teachers had all this energy coming through their circulating in their own system, and it was as if it was cut off at the wrist. Nothing was actually coming through into me in my role of pretending to be their student. And I think this may be where, you know, if I then got that person to put hands on someone else and I put my hands over theirs, I could help encourage that process that Erica Whitaker called, and then the energy would flow. Because you need to, as you go on through the 3 years of training with someone, by the third year, you actually want them to be opening up their field of awareness, shall we say, their span of, their range, their field of awareness, to take in the room around them and the person in front of them, as well as themselves, so that it starts to become not just I, John, am directing myself, but I, John, am directing myself in order to connect and communicate with this student in front of me. And that's when you need to start encouraging the kind of life circulation process that I've just demonstrated. Now, I had my hands on the sides of a chair, but if I had my hands on a person, then I would be continually refreshing my own organized, directed energy around my contact with the ground, my contact with the student, and that central column of my spine and my back in between my four limbs. And I would be refreshing it constantly with the background aim of opening up, opening to my student, opening a connection, a communication, in a sense, linking my energy process with my student's energy process. I think that was missing sometimes if you followed through a Carrington type training, because of the understandable and very necessary emphasis at the beginning on you really are here just to look after yourself. And another version of that that I've seen happening on some other training courses would be an emphasis on sensing or listening, that you're putting your hands on and you're just being an observer, a listener. You're just a listening channel. Now, that's not wrong in itself. You are, in fact, when I say you're consciously refreshing your own direction from hands to feet to back to head, etc., in order to connect and communicate with your student. I'd say more precisely, you're opening up via this way you organize yourself, along with the intention, the wish, the aim of communicating with your student. You're setting up a two-way communication channel. You are indeed opening up right through to the openness of your hands and the openness of your feet, so that you can receive information from your student. You can actually perceive, you can feel more of what's happening in the student. As Walter used to say, are they going up or are they coming down? Are they fixed or are they free? And I would add, are they breathing? Are their ribs moving? And so on. But at the same time, it needs to be a two-way communication channel. If it's entirely focused one way, I, teacher, am listening to you, student, then you're missing the other part of the two-way communication channel, which is the teacher's own consciously refreshed directive energy passing through in this mysterious way to the student. And already the way the teacher is organized if you have this openness, this elastic openness that comes right through to the extremities of your hands, that energized direction in yourself as teacher also begins to communicate to your student. So I think it's in those two ways that slightly overlap, but two ways that people trained from a very non-doing perspective, as I was indeed, and I is how I would want to train people, but they can miss the end product, miss the full stages required for the process, perhaps. At least that's how it seems to me. And then the other version of this is teachers for whom it is somewhat of a manipulation from the beginning, where, you know, you put your hands on somebody's shoulder and you wiggle it a bit to release it, and then you try to move it in the direction that you believe it should go in. Or, you know, you put your hands on someone's head and you literally take their head forward and up. You put your hands somewhere in their back and you literally lift and lengthen their spine. Now, people who've had lessons from me, as you have done, Cindy, will know that sometimes I would lift and lengthen your spine, but I would say that I'm doing it via that two-way communication channel. I've waited for that sense of communication, which frankly I can only say that these days I can feel it for when it happened, when I've got that connection with somebody. And then there may be times when I can feel, oh, you know, if I just, I can feel where she's pulling down through here, maybe at the base of the neck, I could just give her a little hint, a little help to lighten up out of there. And then, as Walter used to say to me, and I found this very, very helpful indeed, he said, it's not that with my hands I perceive myself as doing something to the student. It's more that I perceive the student, probably largely unconsciously, doing things to herself or himself, themselves, pressing down in themselves. And I use my hands to help them to stop doing to themselves those things that they're habitually doing, which are compressing, squeezing, and distorting them, and so on. So I think that just about covers everything I have to say on there. So